Hey everyone, welcome back to the Performance Marketing Minds podcast brought to you by Alperain Direct Response. I'm your host, Joe Adana, and today I've got my guy Eric Schechter, the co-founder at GiddyUp, joining the show. In this episode, Eric shares his journey that led to founding GiddyUp with a group of his buddies and eventually evolving the full scope of the business through the acquisition of Grommet. We talk about the importance of trust in e-commerce and business leadership, how to leverage storytelling to elevate branding, and identifying the key metrics that drive success in our crazy industry. Eric always answers the call when I need him, and we've built a ton of mutual respect for each other over the years, so I'm so grateful he was willing to hop on the podcast to chat. Without further ado, let's jump into my conversation with Eric Schechter. Enjoy the episode. You, Eric Schechter, co-founder of GiddyUp and Grommet, pumped to have you here. There's a lot of things I want to ask you and dive into, but first off, introduce yourself and talk me through the process of founding GiddyUp and what led to Grommet, like what it is and what's the vision here.
Yeah, well, good to be here. It's awesome that you're finally doing a podcast, long overdue. Super honored to be one of the first guests. So I'm Eric Schechter. I'm one of the co-founders of GiddyUp, which is a exclusive white hat e-commerce affiliate network. We were founded in 2013, so we're actually going to be 12 this year, which is wild. And so it's been a long road. So we basically started back in the day. I got some experience in the affiliate industry right out of school for the most part. And I got a job at a network. And it was one of the coolest experiences of my life in the beginning because it was my first time kind of like joining a very fast growing startup. This was during the financial crisis where every company was like, you know, falling apart, let alone like unlike this one company that was the fifth fastest growing company in the country at the time and filled with young, hungry employees and like a super awesome team, young founder, and just crushing it. And so I got to learn about this amazing performance only model where brands would come in and only pay for sales. And then on the other side, you have these marketers that are spending their own money on advertising, driving traffic, and also only getting paid for the sales that they drive. And I just love that because everything I knew before was like the whole agency model still, where people were paying agencies a lot of money to do advertising or run their marketing. And I always hated that model. And I saw a lot of my friends get ripped off by that model. So this new affiliate thing was awesome. Until I pretty much found out that the majority of the brands of the products on the network were, you know, kind of low quality and, the advertising practices, were a little suspect back then. It was definitely much more of the Wild West. So you can imagine like fake celebrity endorsements and all these other, you know, free trials and all that. So as soon as I kind of like got wind of what was going on there, I just, you know, realized obviously it wasn't for me. And I kind of tipped my hat and bounced out and went to the corporate world. But I always just had in the back of my head how amazing this model was and decided that like, man, this model needs to be available for, you know, fast growing startups that have products that are adding value to people's lives. And so basically teamed up with one of the guys I worked with at that network, as well as two other guys that I had crossed paths with during my career. And we started off, and first conference we went to, we tried to pitch a bunch of affiliates and they all laughed at us saying regular products and doing things white hat would never work. But every single product, like the first 10, just hit after hit after hit, and we were able to grow extremely quickly. And so, you know, to this day, we are 100% performance only company. We have three different parts of our business. So we have the affiliate network side, which is exclusive. So basically working with unique, innovative products from real D2C brands. and connecting them with some of the biggest paid media affiliates in the world on a performance-only model. We have an agency that builds out everything a brand needs to profitably acquire customers online. So, you know, landing pages, advertorials, video ad strategy, pricing and promotion. We don't charge a dime for any of that stuff. We invest our own time and money and only get paid for the sales that we drive. And then we have the tech platform side, which is basically a full e-commerce platform, everything from funnel builder all the way to the checkout. And so, you know, we've had a lot of success. We've worked with a lot of amazing partners. We just hit over $2 billion in sales. And this is all from never taking a dollar from anybody other than when we've actually driven a result for them, which is something I'm super proud of. You know, one of the challenges, because we invest our own money and we're pretty exclusive, is that we had to say no to a lot of the brands that wanted to work with us, unfortunately, right? So like, when you only have so much time and so much money, you know, we were only able to launch about 40, you know, new offers, I would say, a year, where we're spending, you know, 30 grand of our own time and money building out the strategies and the funnels, et cetera. And we'd have to say no to everybody else. And so we always knew that we needed a path to kind of like have this grow, what we call a grow and graduate model, which is like, what if we didn't have to say no to everybody and we could just say not yet? And we could find a way where, you know, companies that weren't necessarily at the point where we felt comfortable investing in them, we could prove them out in a model where it was much lower risk for us, less time intensive for them. And based on the results, we could sort of graduate them up to our premium sort of model. And so we always had that strategy in our playbook as we focused on building the core business. And, you know, one day I was scrolling on LinkedIn and I saw that this company, The Grommet, was going out of business. And so The Grommet's been around since 2008. They were one of the first companies that built an e-commerce store that was really focused on new innovative products and kind of championing these small businesses, these really cool products that, you know, the big retailers just wouldn't take a chance on. And so they were like a curator that focused on storytelling and quality and just the coolest shit out there, you know, that was available for purchase. And so we would always use them to like biz dev and look at what was cool and, you know, look at trends, and always respected what they were doing. And so when they went out of business, I was like, this can't be right. Like, that does not make sense. Like, how could they not be acquired or whatever? And basically we reached out and it was true. They tried getting acquired. They were owned by Ace Hardware at the time, and Ace Hardware was just basically ready to just close down the company. And we were able to kind of scoop them up and have The Grommet sort of brand live on. And so what was really exciting about that opportunity for us is that, number one, that like thousands of brands already knew The Grommet name and trusted them. Millions of customers already knew The Grommet brand and were engaging on their email list and like trusted purchasing products for them. They had over 3 million shoppers on their list that were all buyers. And it basically gave us this opportunity, like fast track what we would, you know, once look at building a consumer brand. Now we were like 15 years of brand building in one day. And it was kind of the foray to being able to now, instead of launching things immediately on GiddyUp in the network, let's launch it on Grommet and start testing it with these millions of shoppers that we have. And based on the engagement and the purchase data and all that, we could use that as a way to kind of like cherry pick the best opportunities for the network. And so honestly, like, it was a mixture of being in the right place at the right time, a lot of luck, but also having the funds to be able to pull the trigger quickly and being able to work with that team to kind of close the deal. But, you know, it was a blessing overall.
It's just such a cool story. Like, that's why I had you repeat it all and not go cold intro, just right into everything, because I think from knowing you for a couple of years, it's just, the journey's been incredible. And I remember the story of when you were kind of hinting at me, we might be doing this. This is something that I see the future of our company, and just your idea behind it and how passionate you were of like, we have this thing that's great right now, but here's the thing that's going to take us to where we want to be. I just remember years ago when you were talking about it, it sounded so cool. And it's music to the ears of advertising networks like ours, of somebody that's committed to doing it the right way, not taking the shortcuts, not ripping off consumers, even letting consumers, like on the Grommet platform, letting them vote for what they see value in. And you guys are getting all this signal, so it helps you, but it's also allowing that customer to play a part in their journey, right? And rank things based on how much they want it, which is the most gamified, like everyone talks about gamification and ways to make your platform this way. And you guys just did it. And I'm sure it was a ton of work. You can just do it, but such a cool journey.
Thank you. Yeah. It's one of the things that we have been the most excited about, especially when we were building the new platform. So we started with the email newsletter because that was the easiest way to get going. And it was like out of the gate, these shoppers, these consumers, they're different. Like they are super passionate about small businesses and supporting innovation and all of that. So we knew we had something special and we wanted to build this unique platform that really helped their voice be heard. But we also realized that like discovery was not really democratized in a way where like when you go to any sort of like retail site, like even, I don't know, Best Buy or Sharper Image or any of these companies, right? Even Amazon, right? Like you're only seeing and discovering what they're deciding to put on their homepage, if you will, right? Like what do they want to put on sale? You know, what are they trying to get rid of in regards to inventory or whatever else, right? And so a lot of the times, really cool, unique products kind of get lost in the shuffle. And so, you know, we quickly realized that we wanted to find a way to help like level the playing field so the best products get discovered and the best products win. And so the best way that we realized how to do that was to leverage the power of letting shoppers upvote products that they thought were cool, unique, that they wanted to try, and use that with, you know, purchases and other engagement behaviors to kind of surface these amazing products to the top of our feed, where maybe in any other ecosystem, they would not get a fair shake, right? And so what's been really cool is like products that we never thought would surface to the top actually have. And it's one of those things we say a lot of, which is like, you can come on a Grommet. We don't decide who gets visibility or not, right? We put it all in the power of our shoppers. And so that's been just a really awesome thing because, you know, so often brands are limited in terms of them being discovered by either like their marketing knowledge or how much ad budget that they have, but they can't really go to a place where if their product is cool and people really resonate with the story and it really solves a problem in a unique and differentiated way, it can actually, you know, get to, like blown up and seen by millions of people and get thousands of orders and all of that. And so that's been really awesome. And I think our shoppers have really enjoyed having sort of a lever to help some of their favorite products get more visibility as well, without always just having to buy more, right? This kind of gives them a cool way to participate, even if they can't afford it, or maybe they just purchased it, or what have you. So yeah, it's been really special to see kind of how that's developed over time.
Yeah, it's almost like there's a false flag on some of the big retailers, even Amazon, because they're showing you what they want to show and all of their algos and sponsored posts and all this kind of thing. But are they actually getting a real read on what consumer interest is in all of those products? Because number one, there's so many. But number two, it's, you know, manipulated in a way that makes you see what they want you to see rather than the upvoting system, which is more of a Reddit style, which is really cool. And you guys have launched thousands of products over there.
Yeah.
Talk to me about what you've seen recently in terms of trends and how things stick out now in this new age of D2C and brands. Is it specific verticals? Are they doing something different with their communication and maybe capturing emotion different to a product with creatives? Or what are some of those trends on that side?
Yeah. So, well, I think one of the reasons why a lot of shoppers really love the grommet, and also, you know, the brands that are really standing out on the grommet and doing the best are actually the ones that are putting, you know, their own face behind the brand. I think that we've come to a point where with like Temu and all these drop shippers and everything else, like trust is like a really important thing. And so, you know, Grommet does our part in regards to like curating. So you can't just join the Grommet and list your product. It's not like a marketplace, right? So we, while we launch thousands of products, we say no to many because we want it to actually be a real product and not just like some garbage that's coming off a truck somewhere and like not valuable. So we do our part. But I think what I'm seeing both on the Grommet and off is shoppers really do care about who's behind a product, why it was created, what the story is, you know, like more about the business and the values that they care about. And so you see this even on like why is Shark Tank such a popular show and why has that grown so quickly? And, you know, when products are being crowdfunded, that was an early way of seeing like people really do care about why people are creating this product and so forth. And so I think the brands that are doing the best, both like on the platform and off, are just doing a very, very good job communicating their story, showing their team, talking about why they care about the problem that their product is solving. And it's something that I think is an edge for a lot of these brands now, because so many people are just buying products and having such a bad experience, you know, with buying things just off TikTok Shop or some of these other platforms where they're just very low quality and they end up having a really poor experience. But when you actually see a face behind the brand and someone that's willing to put their reputation on the line behind it, it says a lot, right? So I think that from that perspective, the brands that are doing that are coming out ahead.
I think it even speaks to the why the nefarious actors in our world are so successful. And I was talking to Kyle Kascheka from ClickBank about this, just looking into data of when you catch people that are doing the fake celebrity endorsements or fake Shark Tank articles and all these things that you shouldn't do. You're going to get caught. Don't live your life like that. It's a mess. That's my unsolicited advice to anyone listening that's thinking about making a quick buck. But it's crazy to see the conversion difference when there is somebody there trusted that is a celebrity or a doctor or somebody that people can get behind. Maybe it is the owner and telling their story and why they built it and everything that goes with it. But it's true. And we see it in the data too. And the products that do have the story and some backing by a real person tend to work best. And that's what I love about this. It's just sustainable. It's like, this is how you build a long-term business and not just wondering if someone's going to come over your shoulder and snatch your revenue away from you because you're doing something messed up.
Totally. And I think that, you know, the trust piece is an area that we're just trying to lean into both on the GiddyUp side and Grommet. And so, like I said, you know, we're a curated platform. So it's not like anybody can list, because at the end of the day, I think that a lot of people have shifted from like, yes, you will search for things that you need at any given time, but a lot of people are buying from discovery platforms, right? Like seeing things on TikTok or ads that they're finding on Outbrain and other, you know, ad networks. But the problem is that, you know, again, especially now with AI, you know, we're really looking at a moment where people are and can kind of like fake everything. And so everything from people selling, you know, the dream through a video of a product that doesn't exist or enhancing it in a way that is just far from reality. I think that where everything is going is much more into trusted curation from a discovery standpoint than just like blind discovery, because people have just been burned so much in the past, right? And so what we're leaning into again is just like, how do we create that level of trust? So when people buy something from the Grommet, they know that there's a team out there that is vetting these things, and we're still able to do that, you know, at scale. And then you have this kind of like community component that's also playing a part into it, along with real founders or real people that are behind the product and offering great guarantees and all this stuff, right? So I just think trust is such a big, it's always been big, you know. It's why like influencers and all of that have done so well, and to your point, like celebrities, but usually they're only promoting a couple products at a time, and it needs to like fall in line with their own personal brand. But I don't think we've seen sort of like a very effective, scalable curator that is putting the community first, both of like the brands that, you know, it allows inside of its ecosystem and the shoppers that are trusting an overarching company to at least like, you know, not like reject every brand that like is new and innovative and maybe not the best version that it could be because it's tackling something in a new way, but like, is it a real company? Is the product legit? Is it solving a good problem? And if someone just doesn't like it, will that brand actually take care of the customer and offer them a refund or a return and all of these like simple things that unfortunately just don't happen anymore? And so that is another big trend that we're seeing. And especially because, like I said, AI is just exacerbating this thing where like, now I'm sure you've seen it, is just like, people can create products out of fake air. There's like a lot of scams going on the internet right now of like people advertising fake products and never shipping them, right? Like, so I just think from our perspective, yes, we could make a lot more money on GiddyUp and Grommet if we just were down to sell anything and we're down to kind of like oversell through our marketing in terms of what a product does or what it looks like or whatever. We're just not willing to do that. And I think that not only is that, you know, just based on our own sort of like integrity as a company, but I just think it's a smart business move. If you want to be around for a long time and you want to build something really valuable, the more you can build trust with an audience and create that kind of community, the more sustainable you're going to be.
Yeah. I love it. I had a question halfway through there, but you kind of answered it even more halfway through. Like, what other metrics are you guys looking at, and not just conversion rate and typical KPIs? And when something's listed on the Grommet, what makes you decide bringing it up to say, okay, we're actually going to bring you guys into our premium ecosystem now. We're going to dive in and really help you in. It's not just the upvotes. It's not just the cart size and conversion rates and all that stuff, but it really is more of a trust economy.
Yeah. So we are number one, both on Grommet and GiddyUp. It may not seem real or scalable, but we receive and touch every product before it goes live on the platform, because we want to be that, again, trusted source. And how can you really trust or say you trust something, or you're willing to put your reputation on a product if you don't ever actually see it or use it or touch it, feel it, whatever, right? So we do that no matter what, especially if we're going to bring it to GiddyUp, because we know our reach on GiddyUp is going to be like 100x just because it's all through paid media. But we definitely want to do it for our own community on the Grommet. And then we're obviously, we're talking to customers all the time. We kind of do things similar to Meta or what they used to do, which is like serving customers 30, 60 days after purchase and asking what their experience was like. Was the product what they expected? Did it seem, you know, was there anything that felt misleading, or, you know, a handful of questions just to better understand the quality side of things. Obviously reviews and I think that's been the main thing, right? So yes, the performance is one of the most important things, because without conversion rate and AOV, like nothing is sustainable from just clear, you know, economic point of view, right? So like that is foundational, but you can kind of get anything to convert. The real thing is like, are we adding value to people's lives? And like, would I be proud to show that ad to my mom if she saw it? And if she bought that product, would I be proud? Even if she didn't love it, would she have a good experience returning it and dealing like with the customer support team and all of that? And you know, I just hope more, I know it'll never go all the way, because unfortunately it's just too easy to make money by misleading and selling low cost, low quality products. But, you know, it was really cool because we were in Barcelona recently at the affiliate takeover event, which is completely white hat. And it was just such a special feeling of seeing there are actually thousands and thousands of people, marketers and brands, that do want to grow the industry in the right way, selling quality products, marketing honestly. And I think we're actually making a lot of big moves here. So it was pretty inspiring to be a part of.
Our team loved it. They said it was the best conference they've been to in years because there's so much dilution at Vegas and at the traditional Barcelona affiliate world. And in New York, it's just a mess. And there are people that come up because we've had booths there, and the amount of questions I've got asked about crypto ads and adult ads and how can I run this and get it approved on your network? And even to the point where people have booths that are selling accounts on different networks. It's like, how do we get this far? How do we allow this? You know? So feedback from our end, extremely positive. I heard there's another one in Miami or Florida somewhere. Yeah. When is that?
Yeah. That's in Miami, I think in the spring. So the guy behind it, Alex McColl, he's the real deal. We've been partners with him for a long time, on the Giddy Up side, and, an amazing media buyer, equally amazing human, has always done things the right way. And, you know, kudos to him, man. I know you guys have thrown events, but like from never doing an event to throwing a 1,000-person event, like you're really putting yourself on the line there, and him and the team crushed it. And, he's doing something really special. We're really proud to be a part of it.
That's awesome. The people you surround yourself with are great. Everyone on your team that I meet and get to hang out with is just a joy to talk to and spend time with. How have you guys grown so much and still been able to maintain that core value that you and the guys started the business with? Like, what type of leadership principles in there? Is it in your company handbook when people get hired? Is it something you just continue to reiterate and, you know, leaders speak with their actions and you guys continue to set the message with what you do? But I'm just really curious, as you guys have scaled, you still maintain everything you've set out to do and done it in a good way.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. I'm super proud of our team. We have some really, really incredible people, not just from a talent perspective, but just high integrity, good character. And ultimately, we're always just looking for people that we want to be around, I think, is kind of one of those like intangibles. Like, do we enjoy actually being around this person and talking to this person and so forth? But I think, so like some of the things that come to mind, even to today, you know, a founder is interviewing every single candidate that comes in to the company. And so, you know, we're not like even hundreds of people now. We've kind of kept it tight. So not only do we interview everyone so that we make sure that they're kind of like meeting our quality principles and like, you know, all the things that are important to us, on the leadership side. But we do keep it tight. So like, we've always been quality over quantity. So even on like, I think I just wrote a post about this recently, like on the AM side, affiliate manager side, like we, unlike other networks, we don't just hire people out of college and just like throw them to the wolves and hope that they, you know, we'll see which ones survive and maybe one out of 12 and the rest get fired. Right. And like, it's just kind of a numbers game, which can work for some networks, but we just, you know, again, we really value like the experience of our affiliates, and we want to make sure that we're not wasting their time. And we're also very exclusive on the affiliate side, so we don't have newbie beginners. So I think focusing on quality people, experienced people, people that love this idea of like extreme ownership. None of us on the leadership level are micromanagers, like far from it. And so usually what we're trying to do is get people who know what they're doing to come in and own their area and give them kind of the, you know, the rope to go prove to us what they can do. And we're here for guidance, and we're here for support. I think it's just a very supportive group of people. So like when they come in, they have a lot of people excited to help them sort of succeed. I think we also, we've never kind of called Giddy Up a family. You know, I've always hated that kind of reference. Like, it's like, you're not my family. Like, I have a family I'm going to kind of go home to. But what I do think we are is a sports team. And I've always liked that analogy because at the end of the day, like, we're here to win. You know, we're here to, we say, not just win championships, but build a dynasty. And we're a performance-only company, right? And so I think that when you're very focused on finding people that want to win, that are very performance focused, that are incentivized through performance. And then you're also like on the other side, very focused on character, integrity, treating people well. You just find that those unicorn type of employees that can come in and make a difference, you know, right away. I would also say, like, we just hired a new AM, right? A new affiliate manager. We literally went through 90 interviews.
Wow.
90. the guy who's hiring is a freaking beast. And we found the most incredible candidates, you know, out there, and landed on someone that is a beast, right? And so you can't be afraid to do the work, right? So at the end of the day, you could be lazy, throw up an application and be like, yeah, this person's good enough. Like, let's bring them in. But we just want people that are going to be here for a very long time. Like the majority of the people on our leadership team are going on like year 8, 9, even 10, you know? So I think that's really been it. Yeah, I think it's just like get the people in, and then also just a culture of holding people accountable, right? So like similar to a sports team, if someone's not, you know, pulling their weight, I don't want to have to go in as a founder and do it. It's like, hey, who are the captains on your team? Who are the people that have been here a long time that know how it's supposed to work? Like, you go and talk to this guy and help him, you know, get on track. Or, hey, you just kind of self-select out. I think that's the other piece, is like, you probably have not met the people that have self-selected out, because if you're on the team and you're not like we say, like one of us, like you're going to get uncomfortable pretty quick, and you're going to bounce. So,
yeah, I use the team and sports analogies all the time. Maybe because I'm a huge sports fan, played Division I lacrosse, no big deal. but coming from that world and understanding how a good team operates, that it's not just sunshine and rainbows and talking people up, but being able to be held accountable and be a leader and help your teammates, even though it's not your job. Like when somebody misses an assignment in a sports, like in lacrosse, when somebody misses a slide and you have to pick it up and you have to go hit it, whatever you have to do, like you have to be there. And I mean, when we started our new team and we went from account managers and salespeople calling on big holding and enterprise agencies to going to only direct response in this world of affiliate marketing, I had a slide, and it was the quote from Bo Schembechler, who was the head coach at Michigan, and that whole speech about the team, the team, the team. And it's very, for sports fans, they like it and they get it. And it's maybe a little bit rough around the edges and like all this stuff, like, why do I, you know, care about winning this game? But it makes a lot of sense. Like I use the same analogies often, because what we say too is that me being the leader is like the coach, but the captains are your team leads, the people that manage the players that are more in the day-to-day and help with our clients and all those kind of things. But the most important person in this whole situation are team leads. Like, yeah, they have to be the ones to carry the flag, help people through the hard times, hold people accountable, tell the coach when things need to be changed. And yes, my job's important, but the coach can be replaced, and it's something that is, it's important, but it's not the most important thing. It's those captains of the team and the team leads that manage people. Yeah, really important.
Yeah, they're the heart of the team, right? And so they can talk to those people in a way that I think is just much more effective than the owner or the coach coming in and sort of doing that. I also think like the other sports analogy that we've, you know, talked about recently is also just the idea of having like a system, and then there's like a playbook, and like people kind of come in and they learn how you operate and work, and there's like a clear understanding. Because I feel like without those things, like you just throw 12 people on a field and they're just confused and they're all running like their own version of the play. And can you win that way? Sometimes, but it's much more inconsistent and it's much more chaotic. And so we've really focused on a lot more in the last few years of like, hey, what is our system? How do we operate? What are our philosophies? What are our principles? How do we act when we're on the field? Like, what do we do to win? What are we not willing to do to win? And then what are our plays? So like, even if it comes down to a tactic, it's like, hey, AOV is down, but conversion rate's up. Let's run this play. You know, what does this look like? Or, hey, we're running into an issue with a brand that's dealing with this. Hopefully we have a play for that. If we don't, we're going to create a play, we're going to test it, and then we're going to put it in the playbook. And so, you know, whenever you're bringing on a star player, sometimes they want to come in and they just want to get on the field and start playing and scoring, which obviously you want them to do as an organization as well. But at the same time, we want to bring in high IQ people that can learn our system, learn the playbook, and do it the right way so that they can mesh with everyone, because that's how you really build a championship team, is like you have a lot of really strong A players, people that are killers in every aspect of their role, but they know how to work together and they know what's expected of them. And then I think the other piece, which is really important from a performance only perspective, is are they getting the stats and the data to tell them if they're doing a good job or not a good job? And what kind of stats can you give them to also improve, right? So like, you know, if you're a basketball player, it's like you need to look at what your player rating is at the end of the game. You know, did you have a positive or a negative impact when you were on the court, right? What was like, how many assists did you have? How many rebounds did you have, and so forth? Without that, and like looking at your trends over time, it's like, it would be weird to expect someone to get better if they don't have access to that. But I've realized how many companies actually can't provide that to their team, which is challenging. And then the other thing that we've been very focused on that has helped is like looking at aggregate data. So like similarly to like, you know, I was saying this to someone the other day, is like you throw a basketball player, a star player on the court, and you need him to score, let's just say 25 points a game, right? You're going to look at all the data and you're like, in order to do that, you need to put up 60 shots, 60 high quality shots to get 25 points a game. That's just like what the data is saying, right? So now he knows that when he goes in to a game, it's his mission to find what those 60 high quality shots look like every single night, because that's what's going to give him the biggest chance to be successful. So in our world, it's like, okay, if you're on the CRO team and we know that you need to find wins on the experiment side, we know that you need to launch 3 new experiments, high quality experiments every week to get this type of result and to contribute this amount of margin to the company, which ultimately comes back to your own pocket as well, because you're incentivized that way. And so it's been really like fun to kind of look at all this data and say, man, there are some real cool trends here. And now we can actually support our players and our team with not just relevant data, but actionable data that will help them improve as an individual, help the team, and then obviously help the company. So that's been really fun to kind of like nerd out on lately.
I want to nerd out with you on sports for a little bit longer. Man, I really want to mention the 2017 Philadelphia Eagles and how big of a team they were and how awesome that was when Carson Wentz went down. But I will say that the analytical side of things to help the team. When I led sales, we did a really big project with over 100 global sales reps. And some people think it's a little bit of a micromanaging thing, but it wasn't. We took a look at all the data that we can access for different sales reps across the country. We looked at how many outbounds were going out every week. We looked at the length of those messages. We looked at the subject line length. We looked at how many meetings and opportunities and how all of that compared to revenue. And we essentially looked at the top 3 or 4 sales reps in the entire company and what they were doing differently than everyone else.
Right.
And we provided these heat maps for every single sales rep to say, look, this is what it takes to be successful and here's how you fall in this. If the top score is 100, you're at a 75 on reach out. You're actually keeping your subject lines from 1 to 3 words, which are exactly what they're supposed to be. The people with run-on subject lines of 5, they have a 30% less open rate. You also need to be sending these messages to people, whether it's on LinkedIn, email, or text, between 4 and 7 p.m. at their local time, because that's when they're really interested in opening it up. And through that, it was crazy. Like even just little subject line changes to people's email reach out increased open rate by 10% for the people that did it and everyone else that wasn't saw the same or a decrease. And it's being able to help people by seeing those things. And it's super cool. Like that's what I love about being a leader, being able to help people elevate their game like that.
And some people just need to see the data, right? Like you could tell them that and you're like, hey, 3 words in your subject line, you're going to do better. And they just may not believe you. But like having this like actually spending the time to gather that data, synthesize it, and being able to show it to these people who may be more data driven or visual or whatever, it can make such a meaningful difference. That's super cool that you guys did that. That's like along the same lines again of like what we've been very focused on, and I've come to find is like, yeah, it's very uncommon. Obviously capturing data and pulling insights like that out is not easy unless you have systems that are set up. And I do think that based on what you said, like some people may, I think, come in the beginning and like, why do you need me to either capture all this information or why are you watching everything I'm doing kind of in this way? And it could feel micromanaging, but it's far from what we're looking to do. At the end of the day, we're just trying to find the trends to help them be more successful, right? So yes, you need to send 10 emails to get one person to open. Every single winner on the team is sending at least 10 emails every day to get that one open. It's like, you need to know that. If not, you're just sending 5 and you're like, why am I failing? So I think it's super powerful lever. And I just want to keep going down that rabbit hole.
Yeah. I mean, so when I was a junior sales rep, that's what I thought, right? Like I thought that the call recordings, and we used Yesware to track emails and subject lines and all these things. And I thought that people above me were going to be looking at everything I did, and they're going to call me out on little things and, this is my style and this is how I do it. But then as I continued to progress in my career and learn more about this whole thing, and I actually took a course online about business analytics across all different disciplines of business and starting to learn just what numbers really matter, how data can tell a story any way you want, really. Like you can make one set of data look two different ways depending on how you do it. But it was super cool. And that's the whole, going back to the sports thing, it's like that's what the coach is there. They're not trying to tell you to, you know, cut your hair, don't throw this particular, you know, check or do something. It's to try and help you so the whole team can succeed and ultimately make you more successful. So there's all types of tools out there that are awesome. We used Gong for a little bit. That was okay. But at that point, AI wasn't good enough to really like synthesize all the information and get it as a clean readout. It became something that was more of a headache than was useful. Probably now, that was 5 years ago, probably now it's a little bit better. But yeah, I love that stuff. Like I love looking into that, trying to lift people up in the best way. It's cool.
Yeah. I mean, you've always come across as like a really strong leader, and everyone that's always talked about you obviously has a lot of positive things to say. And I think that's just from your experience, like kind of like what you're saying. It seems like you've learned from a lot of really smart people and seen the downfalls of things that they've done that probably haven't made a lot of sense, and seen all the good things that leaders that you've been around have been able to do to make an impact. And I think the cool part is, similar to me, it's like I've taken bits and pieces of all of that. And at the end of the day, I kind of always step back and look at, like, when we first started the company, we're like, what kind of company would we want to work for? You know, and what kind of leaders would we want to report to? And, you know, we had this sort of like ideal state, and that was really our North Star. And so if there was things we could do immediately to get the company there, we would do them. If there was things that I knew that I wanted to be as a leader, but I didn't have the capacity to do that yet, whether it was the experience or like the education or what have you, like, okay, that's the thing I'm going to work on this year. Like, how do I just get better every single day towards one thing? And so by the end of the year, I've now have this new skill set, and I can kind of be more of the leader that I aspire to be. And it all started for me, at least, with a lot of the incredible leaders that I grew up with and, you know, learned a lot from, respected just as much as the people that I knew I never wanted to be like.
You know, yeah. As well. No, I'm glad this is audio only, so you guys didn't see me blush and smile ear to ear, but I have a lot of mutual respect for Eric, so I appreciate the words. And yeah, it's something that I think it also comes from being a chronic overthinker, and how many times I maybe don't give myself enough credit that I know the right answer to a question. And sometimes it's bad, but a lot of times it's good, especially when you get to know people and you've been around in the industry for a while, that you can pick up the phone and text someone or reach out to somebody just to double check your work, make sure you're thinking about things are correctly. You know, if they have any advice for you, like anything I've ever done that's a big decision, I probably ask 3 or 4 people, and I definitely don't need to do that. I think I'm, you know, smart enough to make the decision, but it's also just you have to be able to see what you don't know, and then being willing to make the step and reach out to somebody to actually help you. Because it's crazy in our world too, and most good people that you surround yourself with are always willing to just shoot the shit and have the conversation and brainstorm. I love a brainstorm. I like tell my wife and people all the time that throwing the spaghetti against a wall is my favorite, because I'm not going to have the right answer most of the time. But through the conversation, you eventually get to the right answer, even if it doesn't start with like some weird idea. It starts with a weird idea and something that doesn't make a ton of sense. But even just the starter of throwing it gets you everything you need in the end, even if it doesn't maybe start out that way.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I love collaborative thinking with people. And I think that one of the hacks there as well is like not having, or just like putting your ego in check and not being so tied to your own ideas. So we've also tried to kind of facilitate that with people. It's like an idea is just an idea, right? So like, even if you've thought of it, it doesn't mean it's like yours. It's like, it's an idea in the ether. And like when you don't consider it yours and you have this like emotional attachment to an idea, then you can kind of let that simmer in the space. And maybe it's a good idea, maybe it's not. Whether it is a good idea or not, it has nothing to do with your self-worth, right? Or your ability to come up with good ideas. But that's how you get to like the right answer. And so like the more we can kind of like let go of like, my ideas represent me as opposed to them just being ideas. It's one of those hacks that has worked really well for our team. And it's easier said than done, right? Because we all want to be proud of like what we contribute to the team and how people view us. But I think that's just really how you're the most productive as a team when trying to come up with a solution, is like, what are all the options and possibilities, and not being afraid to throw it all out there. And whatever rises to the top, like, let's go with it. Let's all stand behind it.
Yeah. You know. I mean, every good idea is stolen. There's only so many guitar notes and guitar chords that you can play. You're not, you know, it just is what it is. So let's end here. What's next for you? What's next for you? Giddy up, Grommet. What happens in the next 2-3 years for you guys? And what are you most excited about?
Man, we're going to continue doing what we're doing, in the sense of focusing on giving as much value as possible to our marketing partners, to our brands and the shoppers. And so that's going to take lots of different forms. We are heavily investing in the technology side of our business as it relates to all the things that are going to be needed to constantly improve performance, constantly scale more brands that we're working with. Now that we have like a full pipeline of brands coming in from the Grommet, how do we give access to more and more brands, like the magic that Giddy Up can offer? We're working with a lot more of a diversified group of affiliates. So working with a lot of publishers and creators and influencers. The thing I'm most personally excited about, at least right now, that the team is working on, we've basically built a Gen AI creative lab. So I've hired one person, well, he was actually on our team before, and he's a beast. And he comes from like the movie directing world. And so he's like a producer, director, but like a technologist as well. And so he's full time focused on generative AI on the creative side. And so we are seeing some incredible results of just producing like basically AI that is indistinguishable from reality, and like what we can do to just make our message as effective as possible, no matter what product we're promoting, testing lots of different, you know, demographics and all these different things. And it's really, really exciting. So I think that's the main thing with Grommet. Like, we're just looking to kind of continue to expand with what we're doing and make product discovery a lot more accessible to more brands, finding more brands that aren't getting a fair shake and shot, and getting them a lot more exposure out into the world. And so there's a lot. I mean, we've probably built one of the most complex businesses. We serve so many different people, but it's fun. I have great partners, and who knows, man? you know, right now we're just having a lot of fun. There's a lot of work focused on Q4, you know, prep, the Super Bowl of our industry. But, you know, we take it one year at a time, so to speak. We do have a big vision, but it's just continue to add as much value as we can to our customers and our clients. So that's really where we sit.
Great. I mean, this was an awesome conversation. Thanks for spending the time in the fall right before Mayhem gets going.
Yeah.
I'm super grateful that I have gotten to know you over the last couple years. And for people listening, make sure you follow Eric on LinkedIn because he's dropping bombs and knowledge, what it seems like multiple times a week now. And you can get some more continued insight from him over there. But thanks for coming on, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, brother.